It's time for another episode of the Infinite Loopback Podcast, an Apple-themed technology podcast with your hosts, Brian Baggett, Jim Graham, Brad Tarver, and Jason Young. Welcome back, gentlemen. Welcome back. You've had a week with your HomePod, Jason. How are you liking it?
So I'm enjoying it pretty well so far.
You'd mentioned you were going to take it back, so that's why I was on Telegram. So I wanted to see if you still felt that way or that was the drugs talking.
I'm still a little on the fence. I got another couple of days. It's more of a decision right now of, is that a smart place to have $350 plus $39 plus tax tied up right now? Insofar as, still, regardless of what room I put it in, it's going to be the least good listening device in that room. It is by far the fastest home automation assistant. It runs circles around my Amazon devices. It's not even a close comparison there. The audio quality is great, but right now...
That's really surprising that, I mean, as good as the Echo Dots are for other stuff, that the Apple one is that much faster for the home automation.
It is markedly faster. It's almost kind of like the transition from a iPhone 3G to a 3GS. Until you had a 3G for a year and then moved into the 3GS, could you only really appreciate how much faster it was? And that's kind of the kind of jump that I'm talking about here. As far as the audio, it sounds great. I'm just not sure. Right now, I had surgery last week, so I'm sleeping in the den. That's where I have it. It's kind of next to a bed that we moved to the den for me. And in that room, that's also the room that has my home theater system. And the home theater system clearly sounds better than the singular speaker. So I'm trying to envision 45 days from now when I'm back up in the master bedroom where I was planning on putting this thing. Am I going to be happy with the investment there? And I'm not 100% sure, but what I am 100% sure of is that 45 days from now, I can go buy another one if I feel that there's a void there. So it'll probably get returned just from the standpoint of kind of timing and circumstance, and hopefully iOS 11.3 comes out and there's better features and maybe there's some kind of leaked roadmap of improvements that we should see to the Siri interface for HomePod.
Very interesting. I'm really liking mine. It does make a great speakerphone. I've used it for several customer calls this week when I was working from home, so I enjoyed that quite a bit. If I'm sitting here working on my iMac doing something like I'm editing the podcast or something like that, and my wife calls, I'll take the phone and pipe it through the HomePod, and it sounds great. So I kind of like that, in addition to the music listening capabilities. This morning, I was doing some stuff, and I wanted to listen to podcasts, but I like to listen to them fast, so I still use Pocket Cast, so I piped it as the audio source to the HomePod. Again, sounded great. So not only just using the native capabilities, but being able to just sort of pipe things through there. I also appreciate the fact that you don't have to be subscribed to a podcast. You can just say, play episode whatever of this podcast, and it'll start playing, which is also very nice. So I'm liking mine. I'm actually considering. I got permission to get a second one if I want it, but I'm not pulling the trigger on that just yet. If I do, that would go in the mess.
Wow.
I know, right? If I do, it would go in the master bedroom. I think the nice part about that was bringing it up from the basement, putting it out, and letting my wife see it, use it, things like that. She was kind of impressed with it. Even though we've had, you know, the Google Home and the Amazon version of this for a while, she's never really gotten into those, never really used them. And even though they were on the main floor for a long time, but this one, she's kind of digging a little bit. Even though it is limited, it's good at the very few things that it does, I find. So I find it interesting that you would be taking yours back. I figured, if anything, my use case would be that yours would be keeping it, but maybe reversed. I think you got a week. You got, like, what, 14 days to do it? So you've already had it a week. So that window is closing, Jason.
I know. I'm feeling the heat. I was very surprised that in the last week, on two separate occasions, which is way less than the Amazon devices, but on two separate occasions, I did see the HomePod light up and start listening as if it had been activated. Now, you got to realize I'm spending, 20 hours a day in bed, either, you know, sitting up or laying down and kind of go to sleep with the TV on. And so it's constantly being fed conversation all day long. So kind of over the last 7 days or so, it has picked up twice falsely when nobody said, "Hey, lady."
I've not had that happen, but I have had annoying sort of things happen. So I'll give you my use case. If you're sitting in the room with this thing or it can hear you, you know, the Siri is supposed to be context aware in this case. So if I have my phone and I'm looking at my phone and it's unlocked and I invoke the assistant, it knows to just only do that. But if you're in the same room as this and you're wanting to say, set a timer. So I go to raise my wrist, but I begin talking before, you know, my watch lights up. It tries to do it through there. I was sitting yesterday, I was editing the podcast. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was kind of tired. It's like, I'm going to take like a 20-minute nap. That's because I'm an old man. So I go into the next room with a recliner. I sit down and I look at my phone. It's not unlocked. I look at it and I tell it to set a timer. And I hear from the other room that the HomePod's going to take the timer, which is not what I wanted. So, you know, it's to be expected. I guess for so long that we've had just Siri on the phone or the watch or the iPad that we haven't had to worry with such things. Like if I had Android devices and a Google Home, this would have probably been a problem that I would have had for a while, but kind of annoying. But, you know, just now, when you guys saw me take off my headphones for a moment, I was turning off the assistant functionality, the listening functionality on the HomePod, just because I didn't want to say something accidentally and trigger it while we were recording.
So one thing I haven't looked into, but I think is a limitation of HomePod right now, and that is invoking any kind of automated action based on a timer that you have set for the HomePod. So for instance, my wife, love her. She is an amazing woman. I got to give her a shout out. She has taken such great care of me this week after my surgery, but she doesn't hear timers go off. She just doesn't. I mean, she can be standing right next to the oven and it's just beeping at her and she doesn't hear it. So on my Amazon devices, I have those set up with an if this, then that any Amazon timer, as it ends, it blinks all the Hue bulbs in the house like 10 times. You can't not see the whole house illuminate and shut off and illuminate and shut off.
Holy cow, that would drive me nuts.
Hey, but you know what drives me nuts? Burnt pizza.
I was going to say homemade bread. Homemade means burnt in this case, right?
That's right. In the old house, when the smoke alarm would go off, you know, I'd say, dinner's ready.
That's my mom's house. I mean, she's an amazing cook, but she's the same way where she gets to doing 3-4 things in the kitchen at one time, and the bread always ends up getting basically taken out when the fire alarm goes off.
So if this, then that doesn't play well with that. But what about workflow or something similar? Have you tried invoking that?
And that's what I was saying is I have not researched as to whether or not that's even a capability. But it was something that I noticed earlier this week that when I set a timer, I was like, you know, there's no easy integration with other things out of the HomePod right now.
So Brian, your use case on conference calls, so that worked pretty well for you? I mean, I think that would be one of my major use cases. If I got one, it would probably sit over here on my desk, which my desk is, you know, in my one big living room of the house. So it would, you know, it could play here and still be, you know, an entertainment speaker for this room. But I definitely think I would set it on the desk so I could use it for conference calls versus using my AirPods. I mean, what's the advantage of using it like that instead of just doing your call on your AirPods?
The problem for me with the AirPods is many of my calls run more than an hour. And what I've noticed with the AirPods, especially a year into them, is that if you're using them to listen to music, they last a long time. Like I can go 2-3 hours listening to music and I'm okay. If you activate that microphone, that saps the energy pretty quickly. So around the hour mark, I look, because I watch the battery pretty carefully, and around the hour mark, I'm around, 25-20%, something like that. And, you know, we all know the trick where you can take one out, charge it for a few minutes, and then, you know, play musical chairs with the AirPods in the charger, and you can get them back up. But it's kind of annoying, and I'm sitting there, and when I was at my previous employer on conference calls, I could kind of zone out a little bit. You know, my participation wasn't always, you know, something that was required 100%, but in the role that I'm in at the place that I work now, I have to be constantly talking just like this and constantly, you know, firing on all cylinders at once. And I can't be distracted by pulling those things in and out. In fact, some of my coworkers notice that if I'm at work and I'm taking calls at work, which is kind of rare, I hate being on the phone at my desk because it disturbs people, but they'll see me with wired earbuds in and they're like, aren't you Mr. AirPod? And it's like, well, I am, but if I'm going to be on the phone for an extended period of time, it just doesn't work for me as well. So what I've noticed with the HomePod, there's no sacrifice in quality. It sounds great. I don't have to worry about the person not being able to hear me. You know, I was a little nervous at first to try it under those circumstances. I did it on Friday for the first time, and I'd been using my AirPods for most of the call, but it was starting to die. And it's like, you know what? I'm just going to, let's see how this works. So I flipped it over. I've been talking to my wife when she gets off work at night and is calling me on the way home. And I don't even think she realized she was on a device like that when I was doing it. So that was a nice thing. And again, you know, I could just use FaceTime and make a call over my phone into my headphones with my podcasting setup if I really wanted to. But it's just really convenient. It works pretty well. So I'm kind of digging that. And I think if I'm working from home in the future, now right now my HomePod sits off to my right, which when I'm recording this, of course, people at home won't know this, but I'm facing one direction now talking to you guys. But if I'm using my other computer, if I'm using my work computer, I'm faced the other way. So the HomePod will probably have to migrate from one side of my desk to the other for general use. Either that, or I'll have to put it a little centrally located between the two computers, find myself another outlet if I can, which will be tough. But yeah, it's a great, I hate to say it's a great, just a great speakerphone, but it is. And the music aspect and the podcasting aspect is really nice too. And again, I've had these capabilities with the other devices, but since I'm so invested into this ecosystem, and I'm not using Bluetooth for most of that except for, I guess, I don't know how the calls are working. I assume they're working over Bluetooth, but that can't be the case. Maybe it's AirPlay. I don't know. Probably AirPlay. There doesn't seem to be any lag that I've noticed, and there doesn't seem to be any sacrificing quality. So if that's what's putting you on the fence for getting one, I would say it's worth it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just being honest here. I haven't actually even heard on HomePod yet, so I haven't been into an Apple store, you know, to check one out. I know we've got the link in the show notes here for this review that the guy posted on Reddit that I saw and a couple of us saw. That it's kind of a really, really, really long review, but the gist of it is, wow, this thing really does sound amazing. For a $350 speaker, it's crazy how good it sounds. I mean, I think the guy he actually said after his first round of test, he deleted his results and started over because he thought there was an error because the results were so good.
Yeah, that was great. So on the R Audiophile subreddit over on Reddit, there's a post this week. A particular user did a test. He had a calibrated microphone in an untreated room, and he found it to be better than the $1,000 KEF X300A, which is considered sort of the best shelf speaker. So I found that to be very, very interesting. They said it had near perfectly flat frequency response, and apparently, of course, as we figure, the A8 and the digital signal processing that comes with that is what allows it to self-calibrate is responsible for that. Consumer Reports found that people preferred the Sonos One, but then again, I think Consumer Reports has been going back to AntennaGate. They hate Apple. But I found that to be a very interesting read. I mean, it is a very long read. If you're not an audiophile, you'll probably zone out. Even if you care about it, you'll zone out. But the guy was very, very thorough.
Was it Tim Cook or one of the Apple execs actually tweeted a link to this? Like retweeted the guy or something. I thought that was kind of funny.
I don't necessarily know if I consider myself an audiophile. I have always kind of considered myself an audio snob. Like when I think of audiophile, there used to be a chain here in Metro Atlanta years ago called Hi-Fi Buys, and their Buckhead store had just like crazy, crazy expensive stuff that was, I mean, we're talking, they had one room where the speakers in the room were upwards of $100,000 for the whole system, and each one of them was self-amplified and, you know, had their own digital analog converters for every single speaker. So like when I think of audiophile, like I think of kind of that grade, whereas I've always been more of the, like, you know, you've heard me talk about the Klipsch monitors that I use. Well, I don't think of those as audiophile grade. I think of those as definitely better than average, definitely better than, you know, run of the mill junk that you'd find at Walmart.
Like budget audiophile.
Yeah, well, I mean, it still sounds really good. And so the point that I'm trying to make here is the A8 chip in the HomePod does such an amazing job with transition from one type of audio to another. So the acoustics and dynamics of your room don't really change, but the data that's coming out of it can change drastically. And I have a big variance in types of music that I like. So, you know, I might be listening to Ice Cube Radio 1 minute and then switch to Kelsey Ballerini. And then the next thing you know, I'm listening to Led Zeppelin. And each of those has kind of a harmonic tone that needs to be set. And so what's kind of unique is if you were to optimally tune, you know, like an equalizer to one's type of music, it wouldn't be optimally set for the other type of music. So there's kind of not a one size fits all from an EQ perspective, but the HomePod does that, right? And the HomePod does that seamless between songs. So like if I just put it on like a random play, who knows what's going to come out, but it's like it adjusts the audio for every single song almost as soon as it starts playing. And that's one of the things that's absolutely the most impressive to me.
Yes, it's definitely a nice device for listening to music. So it's nice to see that it got called out for its superior quality.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Apple was saying all along is, hey, you know, we've got this super, you know, sounding speaker that's also going to have some smart stuff built in, but we're concentrating on the super sounding speaker first. I mean, you know, they basically, that was the company line. And now that the speaker's out, you know, they can proudly say, yes, the part we were really focusing on is really awesome. So here you go, you know.
It's funny you mentioned you haven't been to an Apple store to check this out. I forgot to mention on last week's episode, I guess we just didn't have time, that my wife and I were in the Apple store last weekend just before we recorded. And, you know, we were up at Avalon over there in your neck of the woods, Jason. We were just sort of wandering around doing some shopping. My wife had never been over there. You know, we were just hitting all the stores, going up and down. And as we went to the Apple store, I'm just standing there looking at stuff. And one of the employees came over. They were pushing it pretty hard. They were saying, so are you considering buying a HomePod? I'm kind of like, save it, lady. I got one. I got mine on yesterday. Oh, that's great. Are you an Apple Music subscriber? And I'm like, yeah. It'd be kind of silly to get one without being an Apple Music subscriber is what I was thinking. But, you know, I wasn't rude or anything. Yeah, it's 40 million songs. It's like, lady, you don't have to push the... You're preaching to the converted over here. I already have one. We're cool. I think my wife made some sort of comment like...
You're like, I've got a podcast.
I was going to say, did you hand her your Infinite Loopback business card?
And my wife's like, yeah, there's not much that you guys release that he doesn't have. But yes, no, that was kind of nice that they were pushing it in store pretty hard. And I guess the employees, just like with the Apple Watch, get a 50% discount on the HomePod. So they get it for half off.
Your wife is like, if you could stop releasing stuff, that would be great.
When I told her about when the salesperson had walked away and I told her, yeah, they're getting them for half off. She's like, why don't you get a job here on the weekends so that, you know, we could get those discounts.
Yeah, it would pay for itself. We forget the salary, right?
Speaking of wives and Apple purchases, come to find out she subscribes to the podcast because about a week ago she said, honey, I just want to ask you something. I was like, what's that? And she said, did you really pay $4,000 for that iMac Pro back there?
Oh, that's awesome. Do I need to make her a special custom feed?
Nah, I'll survive.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this on a past podcast, but I was in the bicycle store. You know, bikes can get really expensive, like Max. There was a sign at the register that says, for an extra $5, we'll print another receipt that says that has the amount that you told your wife you spent on it.
Nice. The Apple store definitely needs to do that. So let's see, what else is going on? The iFixit teardown of the HomePod happened this week, and it is built like, in their words, a tank. So it's extremely durable. And I found this funny. I don't know if you guys read this in the before we started, but they had to use a saw and a heat gun to get into the thing. And I think when the saw has to come out, you know that you're in for some serious business.
Yeah, that means your fix-it score is definitely going to be a 1, right?
Yes, it's not going to be very high. In fact, it's not meant to be repaired by normal people at all, and it won't even be repaired in store. So if you bring it in and there's a problem, they ship it off to a facility. They don't do it in store, as you would imagine, right? I mean, you don't have MacGyver back there prying these things apart with a heat gun and something else.
I mean, and that's, I think, to be expected. When you have a high-end speaker like this, it's got to be super tight and, you know, super sealed. And it's probably got weird ports and weird places, you know, to make the music, you know, to tune everything exactly like it needs to be and let that A chip do its thing. So, you know, I think that's to be expected. When you have something that small, it's just got all kind of little things in there that you wouldn't even think of it being... part of the audio quality, audio delivery of the speaker. Yeah, I mean, what's it got, like 9 little speakers around the outside or something like that in the sub? And I mean, you know, it's just, I think that's pretty much to be expected.
I think they also kind of had to build it like a tank from the standpoint of, think about how many times a remote control in its life hits the floor, right? So that's something you use all the time. Granted, now a HomePod is something that you're not really going to physically touch that much, but most HomePods are going to be in central places where there's kids around or dogs around, or, you know, you're going to have it near your nightstand where you throw your keys every night or turn on a lamp every night. So there's a high probability that over the course of the lifetime of one of these things, it's going to take a 3 foot, 4 foot fall more than a couple of times in its life. So it doesn't really surprise me that, you know, this thing is just kind of wound up tight as a drum. And I kind of commend them for building something like that.
That's what the silicone feet are for. So if it lands on its feet, then it does just fine, right?
Except for the white ring that it will leave on your table. So I have a desk that my HomePod is sitting on that's finished. And as soon as I read the article that we linked to this week where it says that the HomePods are staining wooden tables with a white ring, I was like, ah, and I lifted mine up. It hadn't happened to mine yet, but now my HomePod is sitting on a coaster just to be safe. And what's funny, of course, you know, this is the big, every time there's an Apple product release, there's some sort of gotcha that, you know, the media jumps on. Well, as it turns out, the Sonos One does the same thing on some furniture. It's the silicone base that interacts with some finishes on wooden tables. So
silicon gate is not a thing.
Silicone. Yeah, it shouldn't be a thing. But of course, Pad and Quill now has $40 leather coasters for HomePod, which is always funny that when something like this happens, that somebody always sees it as an opportunity to, hey, let's get something out there for it.
Are they 40 or are they 20? I thought I saw them.
Those Apple people will buy anything.
I thought
that's
it was,
what it is.
I thought it they was 40, was it not?
I'm pulling up the article now. I could have sworn.
Me too.
Could have sworn it was 20 because, yeah.
Okay, my bad. Bucks. It's 20. Okay, all right, my bad.
But still. So when I read the article, I thought, you know, that is brilliant. Like, why did I not think of that? You know, as soon as the first article came out about that, somebody at Pad and Quill was like, this is an opportunity. We're going to capitalize. And they're already shipping this coming week.
No, you're right. I mean, we love to accessorize our Apple stuff. I mean, think about, you know, the cases that we buy and all, you know, if the backpacks, cases, you know, all the watch bands, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Brian's got extra silicone cases laying all around. I ordered that new case from 12 South this past week. It'll be in next week.
Now, which one is that?
The Surface Pad for iPhone 10. It's the one that kind of sticks on the back of the phone and has the wraparound front cover as well. And it'll hold two credit cards in the front side of the cover. It looked pretty sharp. It's got the automatic unlock, open, and close, you know, like put it to sleep with the cover built in. So I figured I'd give it a shot. It looks really sharp. You know, I'm a case whore. So
with the cases that wrap around the front and cover the screen, do those not annoy you? Because that would annoy me a lot. What about you guys?
I honestly don't know. It was. I thought about getting the one that Apple sells, and they want just way too much for that one for the iPhone 10. You know, this is the first time they've had a case that wraps around the front for iPhone 10. I think they're like $79 or $99, which is just ridiculous. And this one from 12 South is $49. And honestly, I know 12 South has quality stuff for your Mac. So, you know, I didn't have an issue paying $49 for a leather case from them because I know it'll be nice leather. And of course, I threw in a candle on the order too. So now my house will smell of Mac inspiration, I guess.
Yeah. So speaking of 12 South and just accessories in general, I've got to throw a couple of shout outs to a couple of products that I've added since purchasing the iMac Pro. 12 South has a device called the Hi-Rise Pro, which is essentially a monitor stand riser that has some built-in storage, that has kind of a removable front faceplate, and it's available in space gray. And at $150, looking at it online, I was like, man, this thing is way overpriced, but I want something like this. And so I was like, you know, I'll test drive it, see what I think. And if I don't like it, I'll just take it back. And there's no way I'm taking this thing back. when it came in, the engineering that's gone into this, the machining, the way that it goes together, it's heavy. Like online, it looks like it would kind of be possibly flimsy. This thing is super stable. So we'll definitely make sure that we put a link in the show notes. If you've got an iMac or iMac Pro, you want to get it up off of the desk a little bit and have some internal storage, it's definitely a great product. The other product I want to quickly talk about is by a company called Satechi, SATECHI.net. They make an aluminum Type-C USB hub that actually clamps into the monitor of an iMac or iMac Pro, one of the 2017 or later versions. But what it does is it's got a built-in cable that plugs into one of your USB-Cs on the back, and then it gives you three additional USB 3.0 ports up front, plus a USB-C up front, plus an SD card reader, plus a micro SD card reader. And again, it also comes in space gray. So if you've got an iMac Pro, it matches perfectly. Or they've got the standard, I guess, brushed aluminum, or they call it silver, but it's supposed to match perfectly to a standard iMac. At $50 for that device, it is worth its weight in gold.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm a big fan of their products as well. I've used the 12 South Hi-Rise 2s for my iPhone for a long time. Matter of fact, it's out of frame. I can't lift it up because it's plugged in, but I have my phone sitting on one right now. So I've bought many, many of those. Though since I've made the move to wireless charging in a lot of locations, I don't use them as much as I used to, but they are beautiful products and I like them a lot. And their support has been good too. I took a Hi-Rise 2 with me to Vegas last year. In my luggage, those do not travel well, by the way, if you put them together. So you have to disassemble them. I learned that the hard way. A piece broke off, and their tech support had me a new replacement piece for that, you know, a day or so later, even though they were under no obligation to do it. It was my fault. So great company. And they're a Southern company, too. I think they're in South Carolina. So good folks over there. So it looks like Alto's Odyssey is coming out February 22nd. I'm excited about this. Did you guys ever play the original Alto's Adventure on the iPhone or tvOS?
I did on iPhone, and it was a fun game. There was one that was like a bird that you slid up and down mountains, and you flew with the bird. It was very similar to Alto's that I liked more. I'll have to try to remember the name of that one.
What's fun about it is if it's one of the few. You remember when the Apple TV launched with tvOS, and it was supposed to be a gaming platform, and there's very few games that I actually have on my Apple TV, but Alto's Adventure is a lot of fun to play on a TV. It works well with the remote, the standard remote, so you don't have to have anything special to do it. Very, very good, game. So I'm really excited for the sequel. I think it'll be one of those things that I sort of buy sight unseen, I'm pretty sure, just because I like the original so much. But, you know, to our listeners, if you haven't played it, I'm sure most of you have, it's a great game. It's easy to play and it's kind of addictive and it's a good way to pass the time.
Yeah, you got to support all these good, I guess you could call it an independent game. I mean, you know, they've got other stuff, but it's not a big gaming conglomerate or anything. And, you know, even if I don't play it, but, you know, 5 or 10 times, you know, if I'm spending $2 to $5 for an iPhone game, I definitely still do it. Because I personally think there's been kind of a drought of good games like that over the last year or so as bigger companies came into the iOS kind of app store, you know, world. And a lot of the games are all these pay to play and a lot of micro payments. You know, I mean, that seems to be just the glut of those kind of games that are hitting iOS now is all the micropayment kind of stuff. I still have a couple of games that I play that are mostly around, you know, geolocation or, you know, little collector games like Wallaby and Munzee and Traveler's Quest that I play. I think the one that I'm still holding out for is Warcraft on my iPad Pro, so that'll be nice.
maybe we need to talk about the state of iPad and tvOS gaming next week and software development in general, because there's a lot of these, as you mentioned, smaller companies that are just, they make quality things, and I don't know sometimes. Well, you know what? Let's that'll be for next week's episode. Let's discuss it then, because I could go in for length.
Yeah, I think that would be a good. Yeah, we could definitely all throw in 3 or 4 that we play
that the others of us probably haven't heard of, or if anything, you've just seen it advertised in the store, but you've never played it, that kind of thing. So that would be fun.
So a little bit of a off script tangent here, but you know, you kind of mentioned very nonchalantly, you know, if I'm going to spend $2 or $5 on a iPhone app. Well, so I very nonchalantly think about spending $2 or $5 on an iPhone app, and just about everybody else that I know that's in the iOS community or, you know, ecosystem does as well, right? I mean, that's just part of ownership. I'm not deliberately lumping all Android users into this category, but pretty much all Android users that I know, they don't like spending money on apps. And a lot of times when you ask them, like, why do you love Android? They tell you the apps. And then I look and they show me their weather app, and their weather app is, you know, 60% content, 40% ads. Whereas for me, right, I spent $2.99 on Dark Sky 5 years ago or whenever it came out, and have enjoyed every update from it since. And then even certain apps, like for instance, Radar Pro. You know, that's one that you buy one time, and if you want the extended pro features, then, you know, you can renew that. Well,
I love that app.
Yeah, I mean, I get enough value out of that app and use it enough. Like you mentioned bike riding. I used to do a ton of bike riding. And so I would use Dark Sky to give me kind of the alert of, hey, rain's going to be in the area in 20 minutes. And then I'd launch Radar Pro and actually look at a 5-minute delayed radar to see, you know, where I was and you know, how soon it was coming. So I didn't know if it was kind of time to hightail it back to the car or go seek shelter or just keep riding for a while kind of thing. But that is one of the things that I have noticed is in talking to, you know, a lot of people who are on Android, a lot of them don't spend more than like $5 or $10 a year on apps. Whereas, I mean, I think I probably spend a couple hundred a year, maybe.
I think I used to spend a lot more. I don't just go browse around the app store like I used to, but just the way I can kind of judge it is if you look back at, you can look at your purchase history, like, you know, you've bought all these apps. If you get back a couple years ago, there's a couple hundred apps for a year that I've bought. And now, you know, I guess some of that is I've got the weather apps that I really like and I haven't tried all the new ones, or, you know, I used to try all the notepad apps, but now notes on, you know, on the phone is actually good enough to use and things like that. So yeah, I think it would be good. I mean, we're still talking about it, but if we had an episode where we just kind of had like an apps episode where we talked about iPhone, iPad, and I think, as Brian said, it's really good to talk of some things on Apple TV, because I think a lot of apps on Apple TV are overlooked.
Last thing I want to mention in regards to Android users and apps and whatnot, and I know we poke a lot of good-natured fun at our Android brothers and sisters, but what I've noticed, it typically tends to be two factors that are responsible. One, anyone under the age of 30 is not used to buying software, it would appear. So when I see people, and that goes for the iOS or Android platform, you see people that are under a certain age, the concept of buying software to them is ridiculous. And what really makes my head explode is that there are people that work in the software industry that I know that won't buy apps on their phone. It's like, you do realize how we all are able to pay our mortgages, right? You know, it's through software development. It's through people buying things that we make. You know, it's people don't write these things just always as a labor of love. If you want quality, you kind of have to pay for it. So that kind of blows my mind. The other thing is, I've noticed with a lot of the Android users that I know that the ones that don't buy apps typically stick with that platform because it's easier to jailbreak in a lot of cases. So they'll sideload stolen apps, which, you know, for a guy who works in software development, I don't think that's very cool at all. I pay for what I use because I'm an adult and I have a job. And if something's useful and it has purpose and I want it to continue to exist, I have to support it financially or it will go away. And that's just the reality of economics.
And that's how I feel about buying some of the apps that I do is, of course, I've probably got my 25 apps. Like I could probably scale my iPhone back down to say 25 apps and be perfectly happy with those forever and you know, stick with the platform. But, you know, sometimes I pay for apps just to reward the developer for, you know, without money being infused into the ecosystem like you said, if you can't make money at it, nobody's going to continue doing it. And, you know, sometimes the technology warrants it. So there was that really awesome graphics program you told me about, Brian. I don't remember what it was, but when I got the iPad Pro 10 and a half.
Pixelmator?
No, it was one that took advantage of the...
Procreate.
Pixelmator? Okay.
Pixelmator.
I love that. It still makes me laugh.
Me too. Well, that was like $30 or $40, but it could completely harness the power of the chipset and the iPad Pro that other apps couldn't, and the stuff that you could do with just ease, things that I'm not a very artistic person. Like, I greatly appreciate art, but I'm one of those guys that draws crooked stick people. And for me to be able to take some of my photos and really transform them with crazy backgrounds or stuff, it was stuff that I never felt like I could do in, say, Photoshop or anything like that. And so, you know, those are the kind of apps that I like buying, is something new and exciting.
If you look behind me, just out of frame, and the people on the thing, I can't see this, of course, but there's an iPad drawing stand that I have that's built for holding your iPad at a certain angle. I'll put a link in the show notes. But yes, I love drawing on the iPad. That app is phenomenal. It's great. But yeah, it's a perfect example. And man, we're going down this rabbit hole. Even sooner than I thought. But one last thing about it, and then we'll move on to the next topic, is even those things that aren't one-time purchases, that are software as a service. I use Todoist. I've used that for a long time, and I pay a yearly fee to be able to use it. Evernote. Now, Evernote's kind of questionable because the note feature in macOS and iOS has gotten really good, so I may have to reevaluate that at some point. But I've used Evernote since probably 2011 or 2012. I've been paying for it. So I do use a lot of software as a service. I do like to, if something is good, my email provider, I've used my email provider for 20 years. You can get free email anywhere, but I really like the email provider that I've used since 1999. It's fantastic, and I don't see myself leaving anytime soon.
I totally agree with you there. Yeah, it's a service worth paying for.
And when I get features that no one else does and I'm not getting ads shoved at me, it's pretty good. So
I cannot stand ads in an app. I will, if I get an app and I like it, but there's no way to turn off ads in the app, I will not keep it. I don't care how much I like it, I will not keep it if I have to look at ads in an app.
Totally agree.
Give me an option to pay you $3 or $4 or $2, whatever the price is, to turn off the ads, and I'll keep your app and use it. But I don't like that. It, you know, it's not even that I don't like that business model. Everybody's, you can have whatever business model you want. I don't like seeing them. I find it distracting. The phone is a very concentrated, you know, viewport. I mean, there's just not a lot of space there, and I want all my space for the content that I'm trying to use. So, you know, it's different on a laptop. You know, I understand if you're looking at a browser and they've got ads in there, and I mean, there's a little more space, although they have started infringing there too. But especially on a phone, there's just not enough space for it.
So on the email front, are you both of you guys using P.O. Box?
Yeah.
So I haven't tried that one, but I switched from Google Apps several years ago just because I don't really trust Google with my data. And, you know, some people may chuckle because I actually moved to Office 365. But, and so people may say, you know, you trust Microsoft more than Google. The answer is yes, but only ever so slightly.
If Bing demonstrates anything, your data is safe. Never mind. That's mean. I shouldn't say that.
Wow. But one of the nice things with them is, you know, I pay $50 a year and they just keep adding more and more and more features to, you know, they're offering that's only $50 a year. So, you know, if anybody's out there, you know, Brian and the guys, you know, they like P.O. Box. I like Office 365.
I actually paid for an Outlook subscription last year. They had like some sort of special where it was like only $25, and I wanted to try it out because I do actually like Outlook for Mac. I think is better than Outlook for PC right now. And I use that for work. And so I was trying out Outlook.com for my personal email, and the greater thing about P.O. Box is it's a service, and I use their mail store, but you can also just forward your mail from P.O. Box somewhere else. So I started forwarding my P.O. Box mail to an Outlook, a custom domain on Outlook, It was good, but there were three or four things that just didn't work for me at the time. There were some limitations in how the service would use a custom domain in the Outlook app on the Mac or something. I forget exactly what it was, but I ended up stop using it and just stopped the forwarding. So I actually got a notice within the last week or two that was about to expire, and I'd already set it not to auto-renew, so.
Yeah, P.O. Box is a great service. I've been using them. A friend of ours had told me about it back in the mid-90s. He had used it as his email provider, I think as far back as 96 or 97, so a long time ago. And around 1999, I was looking for a new job, and I own thug.net as a domain, but giving that out as your email address when you're looking for a job didn't really seem like the prudent thing to do. So I moved to P.O. Box at the time, and that's been 19 years as of this fall that I've been on there. So that's saying something. I have my wife on it. The spam filtering capabilities are really good. Their webmail capabilities are really good, very granular. And when you're going out and you have to give someone your email address, it's always an attention getter, like P.O. Box.com. What is that? And It's just kind of funny that it gets so much attention. It gets a lot more attention than if you tell them your domain is Gmail or something like that. So
yeah, they've heard all of those. You say P.O. Box, you're like, oh wow, that's different. Or you know,
we were at a furniture store last night and we were giving out our email for the updates on the order. And she's like, the sales lady was like, did you just make that up just now? And I promise you, 20 years I've had this email address. It's fine. Speaking of software, I do want to mention there was an issue that I've been having with my MacBook Pro where my icons have been getting broken on a routine basis. So all the icons in my dock are broken, apps wouldn't launch properly, very strange behavior. I did some searching. There was this known issue that just plagues some Macs where you have to go into your library inside of your home directory and delete your com.apple.doc.plist or something. And I've been doing that, but it comes back every day. If I don't reboot, if I just put it into Hibernate and bring it home and then take it back to work the next day and open it up, same thing happens. And I've been fighting this for a while. I know earlier this week on Telegram, I had mentioned to the group that I asked for opinions on Clean My Mac 3, and I owned Clean My Mac 2, so I had a discounted upgrade to Clean My Mac 3. I went ahead and bought it. I've been using that on my MacBook Pro, and that issue seems to have gone away. Now, I may be jinxing myself. It may be, you know, just, it may come back. I don't know, but so far, it seems to have gone on a long streak without having the icons having been broken. This happened to me when I upgraded to 10.13 in the fall, and I was afraid that it was just going to be the fact of life. And you know, I wiped my MacBook Pro, did a fresh install of the OS, and I did put my home directory back, but you know, maybe that had something in it that was corrupted. I don't know. But so far, so good. Everything's been fine with it. So I'm strong endorsement of Clean My Mac 3. It fixed a problem that it wasn't advertised to fix, and hopefully it stays that way for a while. So maybe by next week's show, I'll know if the fix was permanent or not. But it's always a nice thing.
That's a weird bug.
It is a weird bug, and I thought it was just something on my side. I've had some issues with my MacBook ever since I got it in 2014 that were just kind of little weird, strange issues. Bluetooth has never worked phenomenal for me as well. But it seems to have just happened starting in the fall, and I've put up with this for a long time because it wasn't like the worst thing in the world. But then I had an issue where applications would not open. I would double-click on something, and it would say, I can't open this. And then you double-click on it again 5 seconds later, and it would open. So I thought maybe it was some APFS weirdness when we moved from HFS Plus to APFS. And that hasn't come back. Ever since I've reformatted, that hasn't been an issue. But the broken icons have been. So we'll see if that stays away. But I just want my Mac to work. This doesn't happen on my iMac, by the way, only my MacBook Pro, even though they're on the same revision of the OS. And a fresh install didn't fix it. But Clean My Mac 3 apparently did. So fingers crossed that it stays that way. So the last thing I want to talk about today as time ticks down is the Flipboard founder claims Apple News is a product living in the past. There was an article this week where shots were fired by the founder of Flipboard who criticized Apple News for not being a recommendation-driven service. And I know Jim and I use Apple News a lot. Jason, you're not a big fan of Apple News. What's the deal with that?
I don't necessarily know that I'm not a big fan of it. Maybe I just haven't invested the time to set it up properly. About the only way that I use it is I maybe two or three times a day I get notifications of articles that might interest me. So I don't know if there's a way to turn up the frequency, or maybe I need to add more sources or what. But it kind of seems like the only stuff I get is like, you know, big breaking news, whether it's stock market fell 500 points or, you know, some other kind of big topic. Sell me on the merits of using Apple News.
Jim, do you want to go first?
Yeah. So I don't even remember when I set it up. I guess just when it came out, you know, I went through and picked out 8 or 10 different sources out of all the source list. It's my go-to news app now. I use it for everything. You know, when I'm just sitting there with, you know, a couple minutes on my hands, I click on the news app and I get the best stuff from The Verge, and I get some really good college football news and baseball news now. And then, you know, just the world politics sort of stuff, you know, I can kind of skim through and I read what I want. I do have the notifications turned on. I tend to think that those are, it's a little more than I would like. I mean, you know, some of the stuff that they send a notification about, I'm like, really, was that, you know, worth sending me a notification about? But, you know, for the most part, it's everything in one place. It's kind of like the TV app on Apple TV, where you've got all this stuff in one place and you don't have to go hunting around for it. And I don't have all these other news apps on my phone. There were, you know, I'm going to go look at CNN now, or am I going to go look at The Verge here? Am I going to go do this or that? And I've found that it does a really good job with the couple of sports sources that I have, kind of, you know, bubbling up the best stuff that I might not have seen in sports reporting as well, which can sometimes, you know, be a, you've got to hunt it out a little more than you would, you know, what Trump's doing for the day, which is everywhere. So I've really enjoyed it. It's good on the phone, but it's even better on my iPad Pro, just as far as a reading medium. So I've just really enjoyed it. Yeah.
So for me, the use case is a little bit different. When it first came out, I had the notifications turned on my phone, and they were so pervasive that I had to turn them off. It was too annoying. But what I do is I have different notifications on my iPad than I do my phone. So I leave my iPad at home. When I come home, I'll pick it up and I'll see things that are curated that I might be interested in. So I can either ignore those notifications. I keep my iPad in silent too. That's another thing that I do, is I put it in, you know, the nighttime mode all the time, so it's not dinging and constantly getting my attention. But occasionally when I pick it up and I'm scrolling through, I can see things that have happened since the last time I put it down that may merit me taking a look at. So that's kind of a nice use case for me. You can also do like and dislike, just like you can with Apple Music. So that facility does exist within Apple News. And it's important too to remember that the Flipboard founder, was one of the reasons he was calling it out, was it wasn't as advertising friendly as his platform. Well, if I'm a reader, there are ads in there, but if I'm a reader, it's not nearly as obtrusive as using competing products, let's say. It's much more of a straightforward reading experience, and it's just a lot better. The other thing too is that I switched to the Siri face on my watch this past week, and one of the sources that I have, the data sources, are the news. So one of the things that I'm really digging about the Siri face that I didn't like at first is that over the course of the day, what you're seeing seems to be tailored through machine learning to what you do. So to give you an example, you know, all of my meetings appear sequentially in the app, but there's also other things in there like the weather or the news or those types of things. And it seems to happen based on the time of day and what's going on. So toward the end of the day, I see, you know, here's when sunset will be. Here's what's going on in the news. Little things at a glance on my watch are okay. It's not obnoxious. It's not sending me alerts, but I do see headlines that pop up on my watch that are part of like the Siri face. I don't know why that is more appealing to me than the alert would be, because half the time I don't look at the stories, but I can see a little blurb, like, you know, just a snippet of a headline. And if it gets my attention, I'll pay attention to it. If not, it'll automatically cycle out as the next thing comes up. So that's also an endorsement of the Siri face as well. If you haven't used it, it's kind of nice. Like right now, it knows that I don't have any meetings for the day after this, so it's telling me what the weather is going to be, when I can look for rain, at what time. Strange things like that. I know it's a weird use case, but I like being able to go and pick up my iPad and have things that are just throughout the day will pop up that I can choose to ignore or act on. And the news seems to be really relevant to me. Like the things that are in it, it isn't just pinging me over stupid things. As I'm going through and I'll read a story, I'll do like or dislike or save. Some of them I'll save and go back and read later. Just a very useful app. It seems weird to me that, you know, I guess, you know, he has a competing company. He'll talk smack about it. And not that I hate Flipboard. I actually used to use Flipboard quite a bit. But again, it's one of those where the native app was good enough. So it was sort of the same thing I was just talking about with Evernote, where I'm going to seriously evaluate at some point before my subscription renews in the fall, as to whether or not I want to stick with Evernote or I want to move to something else, just because the defaults have gotten a lot better. This isn't an Apple Maps situation where it stinks. It's actually pretty good, I think.
Yeah, and Evernote prices have went up over the last year or two as well. I mean, it's like Evernote prices have went up, and it's not even like a little bit. Evernote prices went up substantially, I think. I actually finally let mine expire. I don't even have Evernote on my phone anymore. Or my Mac. It's still on my iPad, I think, just because I haven't removed it. But anytime, and we share our show notes in Evernote now, I just use the web interface for it, and it works fine. So
let me see if I can dig up that coupon code they sent me recently. I just upped for Evernote Premium for a year, I think, for $42.
Yeah, I don't mind the price if it actually had features that set it apart from the competition. That's the thing, that if I'm going to pay for something, I don't mind paying for something. But it needs to be something that's actively maintained and something that is thoroughly being worked on constantly. So to give an example between something like Todoist and Evernote. Todoist, you know, I can add things to my to-do list through Siri if I want to. That's a nice thing for me. They're constantly iterating the product. They had if this then that integrations that work from the Echo if you wanted to do that. You know, they're adding things to it all the time. With Evernote, maybe they are. It just feels like every time I go and use it, it's the same interface that I've had for like 4 or 5 years. And not really a lot of iteration. I'm just paying to continue to access what I'm already used to. I don't like things changing for the sake of changing, but if you're going to charge a fee and you're going to raise that fee, give me some cool things inside of it. And I don't know. I kind of question whether I'm really getting my money's worth from Evernote or not. Even though we had other stuff to talk about, I think that should probably do it for about this week. Nothing that they couldn't wait till next time. So is there anything you guys want to cover before we go?
Nope. I think that's about it, right?
Good deal. All right. Well, talk to you guys next week. Have a good one. Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Later, fellas.
Please visit infiniteloopback.com for show notes and previous episodes. Follow us on Twitter. We're at infinloopback. That's at I-N-F-I-N loopback. I'm Brian B. That's at B-R-I-A-N-B. Jim is at Big Jim. That's at B-I-G-J-I-M. Jason is at J-S-N-Y-N-G. That's at J-S-N-Y-N-G. And Brad is at Meester Idle. That's at M-E-E-S-T-E-R-I-D-L-E. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.